Welcome to the Wednesday night public affairs show here, community public affairs show here on KFM 88.1 Grand Junction, Colorado. My name is Rick Castellini.
And I'm Matt Kettlewell.
And our buddy Adam is teaching tonight or doing something, so he's finishing up the semester over at Mesa. But Mr. Matt and I will be your hosts for the next hour for you to call in and ask questions about anything technology-wise, literally anything. We will attempt to answer questions about cell phones, viruses, slow computers, those phone calls you get from those mysterious Microsoft partners at night saying that you have a virus, laptops, desktops, tablets, smartphones, a Roku TV box, trying to get rid of cable TV and you want to save some money. Anything like that technology-wise, give us a call, 241-8801, extension 1, 241-8801, extension 1. And again, we have a whole hour to talk about a lot of stuff. So we have a few things we need to get out of the way first. So, Matt, why don't you start, and then I'll come in after you.
Sounds good. All right.
And our phone number here on KFM is 970-241-8801, extension 1. 241-8801, extension 1. Or you can contact Matt or I via Twitter. We like to get Twitter questions because you can be real precise with your question and get it right across with 160, I keep forgetting.
140
characters
on Twitter
or less. And that is, Matt is at Kettlewell, K-E-T-T-L-E-W-E-L-L, and I am at Help Me Rick. So tweet us at either one of those addresses with questions that you might have or comments, and we'll read those over the air in the next hour as well. So 241-8801, get a hold of either one of us on Twitter, at Kettlewell or at Help Me Rick. And the website, of course, is helpmerick.com. So here we are. We're here for another Wednesday edition of the Tech Guys Computer Show, or Tech Guys Technology Show. We're getting away from the word computer because computers are dying.
As the desktop.
As we knew them.
As we used to know them for the last, 10, 15 years. They really are. They're dying as a breed. And now we have, that term computer. It's really everywhere we go. I mean, our silly smartphones are just as smart as a lot of, the older desktops are. They can do as much, if not more, in some cases. So,
and we were just giving the lovely Janet here before us a hard time about her CD player on her computer, and we're telling her CDs are dying.
Yeah.
And so we were giving her a hard time. So
I agree.
She just hollered as she agrees. You agree that you're lovely, or you agree on the CDs?
That the CDs are dying.
Oh, okay. They're both true, though. 241-8801, extension 1 is the phone number. 241-8801, extension 1. We're in the new fabulous studios here at KFM.
It is fabulous.
So give us a call. The phones are working. We'll be glad to talk to you about any of your technology issues. So give us a call. And you came up with we've been doing this every month as far as something that you and I are both interested in, which is smartphone or tablet apps.
Yeah.
And so you put out a question on Facebook?
Yeah, okay. I did. And it's kind of the one, a long-standing one that we've been starting to use, is
right.
What is your favorite smartphone app?
If you're a smartphone or a tablet user.
Or tablet,
right.
Yeah.
What is your favorite mobile app?
Yeah.
And then let us know if you do tweet us on with your app or you give Matt an answer on Facebook. Let us know whether you're using Android or an Apple device.
Right.
And
Windows.
Yeah, or a Windows device.
They are actually getting more popular, amazingly.
Well, by how much?
Oh, I don't know.
By
1% or something.
But but it's always good to know. Most of the popular apps are available on all the platforms.
Right.
But it's still always fun to know what you're using. What device are you using? Or do you even have a smartphone?
Right.
I just left a customer's house who she said she has an emergency-only cell phone. She does not ever turn it on unless she's going on a road trip, and she doesn't even know what the phone number is.
Wow!
So then that's
good
that's
for
fine.
Her.
That's fine.
I don't think that everybody needs a smartphone,
right.
But I think that most people do in today's age. I think it's what we're growing up with.
Well, I think that we talked about before the show. We were talking about another question you asked, or you must have read a news article was. Do phones make good productivity tools? Well, how was the question phrased?
Yeah, I don't have it right here in front of me again.
But something in that realm.
Yeah, something to the effect of, are phones good productivity tools? Do you use it for one?
Right, and I think the big thing comes down to is how you use it. And do you use it to your own effectiveness. Mm-hmm. Because, and I think the same can be said for computers, because computers can kill your productivity.
Absolutely.
If you don't put a little bit of learning up front mm-hmm. and know how to use it effectively.
Right. I mean, it's just a tool. And so you have to know what tools you have available and your own learning and personal style. And if you can find the right apps that augment who you are, I think that you can be brilliant in your productivity. On the other hand, if you get on there and you find an app where you start playing with it, that's going to totally kill your productivity.
Right.
So it's really a matter of being diligent to find the right apps and just sticking with those apps. And you can be just, you know, like I say, just brilliant with your productivity.
Right. And with a computer, I tweeted just the other day that folks have to learn how to create forms with word processors as a word processor, not as a typewriter. People who are still holding down the shift key and pushing the underscore to make lines on a form, your forms look horrible. They are very functionally not good, and it's just not a good way to do it. And right. You've got to learn how to use the tool that you've paid for. Otherwise, go get the Smith Corona out of the garage, put it on your desk, and make your forms. But if you want to create forms using a computer, learn how to use the tool, because you'll make it faster, they'll look better, and they'll be more functional.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you'll be able to create it quicker, too. Holding down the shift key and the underscore key takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
Yep.
If you can get the computer to draw you the line instantly versus you having to wait 10 seconds for it to get across the margin or the width of your page, you're wasting time.
I'm going to have you show me how to do that.
Yeah. You learn to use the tools you have.
I don't create a whole lot of documents like that, so I am not proficient in that arena. But you get me around WordPress, and I'll, you know.
Well, there's a good question. I just sent Adam, our other cohort here, I sent Adam an article I just read on Zeit today. I'm a huge proponent of Google Forms. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't played with Google Forms much yet or haven't heard of it, Google has, and we've talked about this before here on the show, Google has free access for anyone who has a Gmail account to all of their online, productivity tools.
Yeah.
A word processor, a spreadsheet, a presentation manager. And part of the spreadsheet, they have a little offshoot called Google Forms.
Yeah.
Where if you need to collect data, and that's usually what a form is, you're collecting data, and you want that data to be automatically transposed into a spreadsheet so that you can sort it, you can count the responses and create graphs and charts and so forth. Google Forms is an excellent tool. I had a woman here in town who she is the vice president or something of an HOA, a homeowner association.
Oh, nice.
And so she wrote to me and she had a question about how to create a form. She wanted to mail a form, a fillable PDF form, mm-hmm. to all of the people in the HOA to collect the information on their address and phone numbers and things like that, that was a good question.
Right.
But it was going to create a lot of work for her, because then she was going to have to wait for the forms to come back. Then she was going to have to transpose the information from that form into her database, into her spreadsheet.
By hand.
And so right then you're losing some productivity because you're having to do the actual transposing of the information. Mm-hmm. But you also risk losing some quality of the data because you have to read the data and then transpose the data, retype it.
Yep, typos happen.
And that's exactly right. Data mm-hmm. entry errors happen.
Yep.
So instead, I instructed her how to do a Google form. And in a nutshell, a Google form is really pretty simple to create using the tools that Google provides you. You just pick the questions. You can even limit the answers that can be given. So you can limit it in the size of the field or the place where people type. Or you can even make them have choices. Like, for example, if you're having, let's say you're having a potluck, and you want people to choose whether they're going to bring the main dish, the dessert, or the side dish, then you can limit it to those responses. So it makes it a much more controlled environment. You send everyone a link to the form. They go there, they fill out the form. You immediately get it in your email, and it gets automatically entered into your spreadsheet. And it's a beautiful thing. Very nice for the recipients and the participants of the survey, and very nice for you as the creator.
Yeah. So yeah, I've used those for surveys in the past, and it's really nice to see that collected data.
Yeah.
It just puts it right there into a spreadsheet, and it's just ready to go. The one thing that I don't remember, at least at the time, mm-hmm. I don't think that you could create any pie charts or anything like that out of the data. Can you do that now? Do you know?
You can, and the thing that it does, it automatically creates a summary of responses.
Oh, nice.
And it'll put pie charts and bar charts, depending on what type of question you have, and give you pre-made summary of your data.
Wow.
And it works really, really well. And so a lot of folks don't even create new, if they need them, they don't create new charts. They just use what's provided, and they're live charts, so they'll change as new people add data.
Oh, that's phenomenal.
So it's very cool. It's a very cool thing.
Wow.
All right, 241-8801, extension 1. 241-8801, extension 1. Give us a call with any of your questions or information or technology information that you want to talk about. Yeah. And your favorite apps. We're as always, that's kind of a cool thing for us, and I think people like hearing about new apps. Anything new you've added to your smartphone lately?
Well, not something new that I've added, but something I haven't mentioned on the air.
Okay.
And this is an app that is for the iPhone. I'm sure it's for Android as well.
Okay.
But it's called News 360.
News 360. I haven't heard of that one.
Okay. So tell us. This is a lot like Zite or Flipboard or any of those.
Okay.
But what this is basically you select what sections you want. So what
topics.
Sort of content or topics. And so you can browse by content, by category. And you can just flip through. They seem to have really high quality articles that come through, and then you can vote them up, vote them down. You can share them and whatnot. But their format is what just really gets me.
Is that what you were flipping through earlier?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it was. And so basically I have a visual, you know, with an image and the title of it, and then I can, you know, just scroll left and right to browse through until I find one I like. And then I can scroll up, and it gives me then a summary. And then I can, you know.
I like that. Like an executive summary.
Exactly.
Oh, I love that.
Yes. And then if I want to read the full article, I can click a continue button, mm-hmm. which it then later gives me a choice to read it through Reader.
Okay.
And I don't know if you've used Reader. I think it's actually called Readability. The button usually says Reader.
Oh, okay.
But it's Readability. And that basically strips out all formatting, and it makes it just an easy-to-read article.
Nice font. Just a text base.
Yeah, okay. And it's just really easy to read.
Cool.
And you know,
is it a learning app? Can you rate the articles that it gives you so you can mm-hmm. call out things that you don't necessarily want?
Absolutely. Yes, yeah, so you can give it a thumb up or a thumb down, a lot like what you do in Stumble.
I love that.
Yeah, but this
love
is
that.
And this, you know, has a lot of the same
News 360.
Yes, News 360.
I'm going to look that up right now.
And I've been using it for, I don't know, 2 or 3 months.
Okay.
And I choose it over Flipboard or Zite.
I haven't been impressed with Flipboard.
I haven't really lately either. My wife uses Flipboard religiously.
Mm-hmm.
They've changed the interface quite a bit to where it is more entertaining now and easier to use, and their quality
looks good.
Is good.
It does look good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the News 360, do you find that they do use a good variety of sources?
Yeah.
Or is it coming just from a few sources?
It seems to be a large enough variety, right. And the quality of the sources is the more important part, I find.
Good.
Is that they really match it, you know, with what I'm looking for. Yep, that's it.
Okay.
And so I've, you know, I just use it as a way to find information. For instance, for the show, I can look through on the technology section, and it has stuff on gadgets.
Do I have to get an account, though? Username, password? Probably.
I don't remember. Probably.
Okay, now here's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
Many accounts. We're gonna go back to the good old Facebook debate here. Many online services that you need to have an account to be able to use the service. They'll offer the ability for you to sign in with a Facebook. Did I see that? Yeah, with a Facebook or a Google account.
Right.
We're going to talk about that afterwards.
Yeah, let's get to that.
I'm going to seed that for you.
Okay.
All right, 241-8801, extension 1. If I can find the phone here, where is the phone? Oh, it's right here. They moved it. Hello, welcome to the Tech Show with Matt and Rick. How can we help you? Hello?
Looks like it's still ringing.
Yeah, I can hear dead space. Hello, welcome to the Tech Show with Matt and Rick. How can we help you?
Rick, this is Tom Croak. How are you doing?
Hey, Mr. Tom. I'm good. And yourself?
Doing good. Question about my iPhone.
Yes.
It's been consistent, you know, 2 or 3 times. And
Tom, we're only getting about every fifth word.
Oh, you're only getting about every fifth word. Let me pull over here. How's that? Is that working any better?
Yeah, that's better. Much better.
Hello? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's... Yeah, that's better, Tom. I lied to you. It's not better. You must be in a real bad area for signal.
Oh.
Call us back when you're in a better area, because yeah, you're cutting out a lot.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, bye-bye. Darn it. So we're on phone two, by the way. 241-8801. It's so funny. Here we are in the second decade of the 21st century, and we're moving pretty rapidly through the second decade, and we still have very poor cell phone service overall.
Right.
You know, as far as signal.
Yeah.
And in the Grand Valley, I just don't understand. There's just not enough antennas, I guess.
I don't know.
It's not geographical, because there's not a lot of barriers.
No, there's nothing that's getting in the way.
Yeah.
So I haven't understood that either. And I think it's certain companies...
Yeah.
Are, you know, maybe just
that's
not
true.
Upgrading as well.
I
know
true.
That, you know, who I switched to, I've had no problems.
None at all.
None at all.
That's good.
And
the one I'm with, yes.
Yeah.
And it sounds like Tom. Tom might be using the same service
I am. Yeah. I found that problem mostly right here in downtown.
It
was just so horrible.
We're talking about AT&T. AT&T is horrible in the Grand Valley. 241-8801, extension 1. 241-8801, extension 1. Whoop.
Wrong one.
Nope. They hung up. Hello. Welcome to the Tech Show with Matt and Rick. How can we help you? No, it's just not working. I'm going to hang up on that one. Hello, welcome to the Tech Show with Matt and Rick. How can we help you? Nope. Something's going on with the telephones. Don't know what it is. Try to call us again, 241-8801, extension 1. The app I wanted to talk about today, I love watching weather. I've always been a weather watcher since I was a kid. And Yahoo just released a weather app. And it's a little bit rough around the edges, but it is a weather app, free weather app from them, and it offers real high quality pictures depending on where the cities are that you're watching, the very high quality pictures of that area, and then when you scroll up, you get the forecast, the standard forecast, and the 5-day forecast. You get the standard maps for radar and so forth. A real cool animation for wind, a real cool animation for the daylight available left in that day, and then of course your verbose stuff. Very cool. It's a very fast app, very pretty app, and very functional.
Looks very
and
clean.
Very clean. I love the look of it, and it's very readable, and it's fun to use. It's got some neat features, all very accessible. There's no ads, anything like that, like Weather Channel or those kind of guys. Well, our phones keep going on and off. 241-8801, extension 1. But yeah, if you like to watch the weather, I'd highly recommend looking at the new Yahoo Weather app. It's very, very cool. It's made it to my front page. It's supplanted Weather Underground, which I really like.
Right.
And I took Weather Channel completely off my phone.
Did you?
And the phone for the iPhones, the weather app that comes with the phone is pretty good.
It's not too bad.
It's very clean and simple, but this one's just kind of fun because it's pretty. And the other neat thing about it is if you're a photographer, you can join a Flickr group and you can submit photos to this particular Flickr group. And if they accept your photos, they'll be put into the rotation of the photos.
Nice.
So it's kind of fun. So it's a brand new app, brand new thing. So I think it's going to take a while for it to get off the ground with photos. If your particular area doesn't have photos, then during the day it has just clouds, and at night they have stars. So it's kind of boring for small cities. But until I think it gets off the ground, there should be some great art
nice.
That comes in there. Great photography art.
Nice.
Well, let's try these phones again. Nothing there. Nope, see, the phone's off again. I think something's going on with the telephones today. Give us a call again, 241-8801, extension 1. We keep seeing it flash. We had Tom on there briefly a few minutes ago, but then all of a sudden he went off the air. And if you have access to Twitter, you can tweet Matt at Kettlewell or me at Help Me Rick. And we can also answer questions or take your comments that way as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, just a moment ago, before we were getting with Tom, before
we were talking about services.
Right.
So, like you mentioned about the News 360, and if you have to make an account, do you like to sign in with the single sign-in using your Google or Facebook account?
Yes.
Now, tell me what you think about that in terms of security, because I think, for myself, I see that as a security risk, because if I don't have a good password with Facebook, or if I happen to have, even if I have a good password and it gets hacked, then they have access to all my accounts that are linked to it. What is your thought on that? Same with Google, because Google is also one of the common ones where you can do it as a single sign-in.
Right.
You've not thought about it, have you? Have you thought about it?
Always. Security, okay. I think about all the time. Okay. I'm just, formulating a...
But does that make sense? Am I thinking...
I don't think so. I think that a lot of the security issues like that have kind of gone away. Because they have access to one account, they don't necessarily have access to the other.
Yeah, if you have a single sign-in... If they find out my username and password for Facebook,
right?
And if I'm using it for Haiku Deck and I'm using it for News 360, again, right. Those are usually, arguably, not necessarily important things, but still, it's your stuff,
right?
I mean, I just see that as a potential problem. I've not looked and researched how that's addressed.
It usually the permissions that you're granting aren't high enough to truly be a security risk. I mean, they can. Possibly, if they actually know your password to Facebook, it's not always the same password that you're setting it up with, because you're not always setting up a actual username and password with this other. You've only granted access to it. But if you do log in as them, then you can do kind of some of the same stuff there.
Okay. The potential is there for folks to want to use the single sign-in, using a Google or a Facebook account to sign in to other services, because then you don't have to remember as many passwords.
Exactly.
But I have not researched myself, and if somebody else has, call us, 241, we'll try to answer the phone, 241-8801 extension 1, or tweet us on what you've researched about this. But I like where you're going with this, is that hopefully those companies offering the single sign-in are offering some kind of protection to those third party services,
right?
If you're using the primary login is Google or Facebook,
right?
I just don't know. I have not researched that yet.
But, that it just brings up a really good question,
because I would prefer to have different sign-ins for everything,
right?
I pretty much don't like to cross-pollinate my accounts, because I just feel like then I'm giving up more control over those accounts' security and settings,
right? I like the convenience.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think it's definitely a very attractive thing for many people, because it is convenient.
Right. But you have to also remember that convenience is what killed Microsoft Windows. They created...
Explain.
Oh, okay. They created so many convenience things, so many things that were nice. Those were their security breaches.
Oh, that's true.
The ActiveX and things like that.
Administrative control. Yes. Administrative access. Yeah.
Yeah. There were all these things where they wanted to make, the prettiness and the fun and everything. But by doing that, they were actually open doors for hackers to get in. And that's what makes Microsoft what it is today, because they weren't designed around security. They were designed around flexibility and doing good, fun things. But it ended up being their downfall at the same time. Could that be a problem for Facebook? I don't know. I think I'd have to research that a little bit more to really see that.
Let's both try to do that for next month. I think that'd be a good topic to explore. And
I think so. I have seen some companies that will allow you to single sign on for certain permissions, but then they still require you to add a password. So they already know what your name is, your email, and all of that. They still want you to actually create an account with them, even though you've used your Facebook credentials.
Well, and here's another thing I think is gives up control too, is if I use a single sign-in, and again, what we're referring to as single sign-in is many new web services that you'll come across, they'll give you the option of creating a new account or using your existing Facebook or Google account to use their service. and that's called the single sign-in. But I'm too lazy also to read all of the privacy and legal, the terms of agreement.
Right.
Because when I single sign in, what information am I given this service that's a brand new service that I've never heard of? And I do a lot of that, trying out different services. And how much information by doing single sign in am I giving that company?
Right.
What can they access from those other accounts, which are purportedly important accounts for the person using those? Like, for example, your Facebook account. You use it a lot. You've got all your personal info on there.
Oh, yeah.
So what, do you read the terms of agreement and say, what am I giving this company?
I actually do.
Okay.
Most of them.
You scan it.
They give me an overview in the desktop version. They give you an overview of what it is you're giving up.
Okay.
And it basically will tell you you're giving up, that they will have the ability to
when
read.
When you're doing the single sign-in.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
That you'll have the ability, or they will have the ability to, post on your behalf and, things
right,
like that.
Right.
And so there's
that certain, scares me.
It does. But in order for them to really utilize the service that they have, that, sometimes they actually need that.
Yeah.
No, I haven't had separate. Anybody abuse it yet.
Yeah.
And so I guess as long as it's not being abused, I'm okay with that. Because in order for me to, for instance, I listen to Pandora and I like to share that.
Right.
And, say, hey, I'm listening to this awesome song.
Do you do single sign-in with Pandora? Or you don't have a...
No, that's not single sign-on, but that's still using the same service.
Got it. You've authorized them
Yes, I have authorized.
To tie it in with your Facebook account.
Right.
You've linked it.
Yeah, but there's really not a whole lot of difference between linking those accounts.
You don't think?
No, not really. The only difference is they can't actually get into my Pandora account directly, but they could still post as Pandora.
Okay. All right. I got you. Well, so it's a good security thing. I think we should kind of investigate. Maybe we'll discuss that in 2 weeks when we're back on the air.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, 241-8801, extension 1. If Tom's out there still listening and you're in a better area cell phone-wise or you're near a landline, give us a call, 241-8801, extension 1. He had a question, it sounded like, about his iPhone, and so we'd love to get him back on. Or if you're a Twitter user, you can tweet Matt at Kettlewell, or find him on Facebook at Matt Kettlewell.
Yep.
Or you can tweet me at Help Me Rick. So give us a call, 241-8801, or contact us in one of those other methods. Back to the single sign-in. The other thing I wanted to talk about that was new this week. Amazon released a very cool update. Speaking of apps, they released a very cool update to their Amazon Kindle app for the iPhone and the iPad, and it's geared for visually impaired and blind people, and it allows, but it'll benefit everyone. And what it has is it'll now read aloud more than 1.8 million titles that are available for download into the Kindle app can now be read aloud as an audiobook.
Oh, wow.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of folks, whether you're visually impaired or not, that like to listen to audiobooks. So to have that ability built into the app is awesome. Because I don't know, if you have a Kindle Fire or one of the Kindle tablets, call us up and let me know, unless you know, Matt, whether or not they do the readback function, the reading function. I don't know if they do.
I don't know.
Because this is pretty cool. The Kindle app for the iPhone or the iPad, to me, work awesome. And if you have an iPhone or an iPad, I don't think there's really a reason to get a Kindle because the app works so darn well. So I like that. But anyway, so they've just released that and a few other little niceties for blind and visually impaired folks as well are included in that update. And that's a free app, of course, because they want you to buy books.
Right.
So, all right, 241-8801, extension 1, 241-8801, extension 1. I talked last month that I just got back from Boston, and I used an app called Halo. Do you remember? We talked about that on the air, didn't we, or before the phone?
Well, I don't remember. Remind me.
Well, my brother, my dad, and I were in Boston visiting my son, and we had to take we were going to take public transportation to get up to the airport early the morning we were leaving. Well, we get up and it's just raining cats and dogs. And so we had, you know, a couple bags each, and we didn't feel like walking 8 blocks to the train station. So we decided to try to find a cab. So I called 2 places, never answered the phone. Called the 3rd place, was on hold. And then while I was on hold, I remember earlier in the week at one of the restaurants or coffee shops or somewhere I was at, there was a little ad for try out Halo to get a cab. And it's H-A-I-L-O, you know, like hailing a cab. And so I was on hold with this one company, I downloaded it, and the app uses the GPS on your smartphone. And let's see, I was going to try to show it here to Matt while we're talking. Let's see, there it is, Halo. And then what it does is it finds out using the GPS where you are, and then any of the cabbies that are using this particular app, it'll show you where they are, and you say where you want to go and when you want to go. And so once you put that in there, where and when you want to go, it immediately sends out a message to the cabbies that use this service. And then I immediately got a return that so such and so forth, I couldn't remember his name. Again, it was a foreign name, obviously, with these cab drivers on the big cities.
Right.
But we'll say his name is Joe. It says, Joe has accepted your fare, and he'll be on his way and should arrive in the next 4 minutes. And on the app, this is pretty crazy, but on the app, I see his little cab. Again, it's a rendition of his cab. Driving through the streets of Boston over to where our place was.
No way.
Very cool. And so I was telling him we had to rush downstairs because it worked so quickly. It worked so darn quickly. And I was still on hold with this other company. So obviously I hung up on the other company. So we got our stuff together and ran downstairs. And as I was watching the phone, and pretty soon coming up over the hill, we saw the cab coming. And there he was.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so I asked the cabbie. I said, this worked extremely well for us. I said, how do you like it? And he said, well, you know, like dispatchers. He said, I don't like dispatchers. And so as we talked, what he meant was that the dispatcher was a intermediary. It's a third party that intercepts my request.
Oh, right.
And then he uses the dispatcher uses or determines who they want to give the fare to. So he told me in the cab, he said, for some of the better fares, you know, some of the better, maybe longer fares or whatever a better fare is for a cabbie, the dispatcher would route to his friends and give preference.
Oh.
Where this is a very democratic way to do it, because if you're participating in the service, the first one to accept it gets it.
Nice.
And it doesn't go through an intermediary, because all the cabbies using it see the request, and the one who responds to it first gets it.
Awesome.
And so he said it works great for him, and it worked excellent for me as a person looking for a cab. And I paid him through the app.
Oh.
I could pay him and tip him through the app.
Through the app?
Through the app. I did not have to cash. I didn't have to give him any cash. I didn't have to give him my credit card. It all happened in the app.
Oh, that's awesome.
He picked us up. He knew where we were going because I put it in the app. He took us to where we were going. He saw that I paid. He saw what I tipped him. And we said goodbye. Unbelievably great app. And
wow.
And it was really fun. The reason that came up is that today, in the news today, in New York, there's another service called Uber Cab, UberCab, Uber Cab. And it's kind of a similar app, apparently. And the Cab Association in New York nixed it because they didn't like the fact that it took out the middleman. But now it looks like that they're going to allow it again because it leaped another legal roadblock. So, but again, it's one of those things where true democracy works, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start putting in middlemen and people, you know, lining each other's pockets, then it loses its effectiveness. So it's a very cool thing. All right, 241-8801 extension 1 is our phone number. 241-8801 extension 1. Call us with any of your tech questions and we'll be glad to get you on the air. We'll see if those phones are working. For some reason they were kind of acting goofy. But anyway, it was a great thing, and there was a use of an app that was extremely useful, extremely timely, and worked as advertised.
Nice.
Just unbelievable.
Nice. Now, I noticed as I was looking at your phone that it's not a service that's used here in town.
No, it's got to be
in a bigger city.
And only certain cities.
Right.
So apparently right now I looked, it's only in a couple cities in Canada, Boston, I think Minneapolis in the United States, and then one or two European cities.
So it's really just starting out.
It's very much starting out.
And
So I'm looking at this Uber cab that's in New York City. So it's, I think it's a service that they're trying to sell and push in these different areas. And it just happened to be something they were using there, and unbelievable.
Now, how is it that this Halo is making their money?
Well, I'm sure they're taking some percentage of the fare, as I'm guessing, is what they're doing. Or maybe...
Maybe the cabbie
signs up for a service. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
Somehow that I haven't looked into that.
Right.
I just use the darn thing.
Sure.
As long as it worked.
Yeah, it worked. And
I'm just hoping my credit card's not being used in Bangladesh or something. But it hasn't. I've been back for a month. I didn't do anything. 241-8801 extension 1. 241-8801 extension 1. What else did you see in the news this week?
Well, do you use Skype?
Yes, I do.
Do you use Outlook.com?
I do not.
Well, did you know that they have integrated the two?
I figured they were. I heard scuttlebutt. Now, how are they integrating them? What are they doing?
As best as I can tell, it's just a video service now that they allow you to.
You know why? It's because they got rid of MSN Messenger.
I didn't know that.
Exactly. See, when Microsoft bought Skype, they put out to people that used MSN Messenger that was going to go away.
Ah.
And that's what happened.
There we go.
Yeah,
okay, so Skype is now, so now they've got a fairly decent program inside of Outlook.com.
And, right. Oh, can you access Skype from within Outlook.com?
From within Outlook.com.
So it's kind of like the Google Talk.
Exactly.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
It's
good for them. Personally, Skype has been giving me just fits. I mean, I've just quit using it altogether. But
well, Google Talk works very well. Very clean.
Right.
Very rarely have sound or video problems. Skype, to me, sometimes it gets kind of squirrely.
Yeah. And I don't like the interface with Google Talk. It's just kind of...
Because?
I don't know. It just seems...
Too simplistic or... Are you talking the Google Hangouts or the Google Talk?
The Google Talk.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I haven't done Google Hangouts. I haven't been in Google Plus in forever.
Okay. Because you're a Facebook guy.
I am, you know. I have to say, though, I have been getting onto Google Plus periodically, checking it out, and there are a ton of changes.
Right.
But to the point where when I get on there, even I feel kind of overwhelmed to where I would need a couple hours just to play around, just to see what's really there.
Right.
And to get really acquainted, because it looks like they've added a whole lot of features since the last time I was there.
Well, going back to Outlook.com, have you used it much and kind of worked with the Office 365, anything like that?
No, I've not used it at all.
Yeah. Check it out. They've made some good improvements. It's a big improvement, I think, over Hotmail. Hotmail was definitely starting to show its age.
Right.
And now that they've integrated the Office 365, which is to compete with Google Docs and Gmail, you can use an online version of Word and Excel. And PowerPoint is online too. And it works pretty well.
Nice.
Now, there is a subscription service. I don't think, don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure that you cannot use them free like you can Gmail.
Right.
It's a subscription service per year, not even per month.
Wow.
So I think it's like $99 per year. You can subscribe to Office 365. And I think that's for five accounts. I'm going to look at that real quick.
Okay. Now, what is the differences? I mean, why would you want to pay money to use Office 365 versus the free Google Docs? I mean, what feature sets are so much better?
I think the big – they do have a monthly subscription. I think the big thing is I just met a woman today who spends half her year in Finland. A good example. In Europe, Microsoft is not as big, believe it or not, as it is in the United States.
Right.
Europeans use a lot more Linux.
Yep.
And they are very comfortable with and use OpenOffice or LibreOffice.
Yeah.
Pretty widely, not only in schools but also in government situations and people in homes. And so she has a newer that she bought in Europe, a newer MacBook Air. And when she bought it, the Apple people in Europe actually steered her into OpenOffice. Oh. And helped her install OpenOffice, which is nice. A free product.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it works great, and she loves it, and she's happy with it, and, of course, happy with the price free.
Of course.
In the United States, you go into an Apple store, they're going to try to steer you into Apple Works or Microsoft Office. And I think in the United States, we're so stuck, in my opinion is, we're so stuck on brand name.
Right.
That no matter, just because it says Microsoft, you think you have to use it. Just because you need a word processor, you think you have to use Word.
Right.
And this is not the case. And I think that's what they're trying to capitalize on to compete with Google Docs.
Gotcha.
Is that they're trying to get the people that think they have to have Word.
Or that if you get something for free, you get what you pay for kind of thing. And that's just simply not the case. I mean, OpenOffice, LibreOffice, Google Docs, these are all free things that they work flawlessly.
And if you're doing Shift _, any of them will work just fine.
And if that's why I use it, because that Shift _ works great.
So here's the thing. Here's the other thing about Office 365, and this is one good thing. They do have a monthly chart, a monthly and a yearly subscription. $10 a month, which would be $120 a year if you go per month, or $100 per year, and that includes 5 licenses.
Oh, okay.
So that's 5 different logins, which isn't bad.
So a whole family.
And it does give you access, and I forgot about this, the Office 365 gives you access to not only Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, but also Access and Publisher.
Okay.
So that's not bad. And if you need
But Access
those,
is...
the database.
There is a Google Docs version of a database, isn't there?
Well, it's just kind of the Google Forms with spreadsheet.
Oh, okay.
There's no true database.
Oh, okay. That's right. Zoho does.
Zoho has
what I was thinking. Yeah.
But, you know, so if you're stuck in name brands and if you think you have to have Microsoft... It's not horrible, but again, when you start looking at $100 per year, even though they're giving you 5 licenses, you still can buy Office 2013's a new version.
Right.
You can buy, I think, for $149 or $139, the Home and Office or the Home and Student for 2 PCs. They've actually decreased it from 3 to 2 PCs, 2 licenses.
Mm.
But it only includes Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. So if you need Outlook, if you need Publisher, and especially if you need Access, you got to go up to the professional version, which is $300 per seat.
Right.
But it is a one-time charge.
Right.
And you can use Office ostensibly for years. And so if you're using if you're not upgrading it every 2 years, then it'll be good for 5-6 years easily.
Right.
And you're
going
to save money.
Right. Of course, really, you should be using Outlook.com at this point.
My opinion. Yeah, my opinion, too.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of people, though, that like doing their email with a desktop application.
I met some resistance with somebody here a couple weeks ago who was the same way. I had, you know, she was having some sort of an issue. I said, well, you know, you should maybe consider Gmail or, you know, one of these others.
Mm-hmm.
And wow, I got ripped for it.
Now, what was the reasoning? Why didn't they like that idea?
She wasn't real clear other than, you know, there was just something about putting her data in the cloud that she was just very uncomfortable
with. So a privacy kind of thing.
It did seem to be kind of a privacy reliability issue that she questioned. And, you know, but truth is, you know, I've had my Gmail account for a couple years and never had issue one, never lost a single email. I don't have the headache of having to maintain a mail server or you know, my own software or anything like that.
Right.
I mean, there's more reliability issues of having it on my laptop than there is in a Gmail
and security
cloud.
Issues.
And security, yeah.
Right.
I mean, somebody could, you know, grab my laptop and, wow, they suddenly have access to everything. And, you know, I mean, the data.
Well, and the other thing, too, is if you're using a desktop application for your email, so many people will keep a large inbox or they'll delete things and not delete their deleted items or never clean out their sent items. And after a while on a desktop app, if you're not doing the database functions, which all of them have, to kind of keep that database working properly and cleaned out, then you're going to get sluggish performance.
Oh, exactly. Also. You know, and I'd forgotten about that. In fact, I've been kind of spoiled, you know, being up in Gmail because I don't clean out my scent mail. I don't clean out my trash. I don't.
And that's one of their features. They actually say that's a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so then if I go back, you know, a year later and say, oh, I know I sent this to somebody. I can go and I can look it up, and it's still there.
Right.
But it's out of my way. And it's not slowing anything down because of the way the Gmail does that. So I have no performance issues.
I agree. I totally agree. And I think all the upsides far outweigh any of the upsides you can say about Outlook. And a lot of people say, well, what if I'm offline? And there are ways for you to have offline Gmail if you're using Chrome, if you really need that. But at the same time, we're so connected anymore. My thing is usually, hey, if you're offline, you're probably so far out of reach of society that you shouldn't be worrying about your email anyway.
Exactly. Yeah.
Enjoy your camping trip.
Exactly.
Enjoy your time on the beach. You know,
yeah,
something like that.
Exactly.
So
I agree with that assessment.
But again, I think that's because when I with technology, I've always wanted it to be a life enhancer, not a life problem.
Right.
And I think a lot of folks just don't learn enough about the technology to make it a life enhancer. And that's a big difference. When you use the technology, it can actually save you time. It can actually create more of your own personal time versus suck a lot of time out of your life because you haven't spent the time learning about it.
Exactly.
And that's why we're here twice a month.
Yeah.
5:30 to 6:30 on the first and third Wednesdays.
Exactly.
And the phones usually work too. We were super busy last month.
Yeah, we were. I'm thinking something weird is going on with the phones.
Yeah.
So people have probably listened to the phone problems, decided not to call in. We'll get that figured out so that you can save up those questions for next time.
Couple weeks, yeah.
Yeah. Now here's an interesting question I have for you, Rick.
Okay. I'm listening.
Do you think that the average person needs to know HTML?
No. And I'm going to say that because you just said you just had an acronym there or an abbreviation.
Right.
I'm going to guess at least 9 out of 10, maybe 9.5 out of 10 people listening have no idea what it means or even what context.
Should they know what it is?
I don't think so. Now, explain what HTML is and tell me why you pose the question and what you think the answer is what your opinion of the answer is.
HTML is the language that's used for writing web pages.
Right. So it's a programming language
for all intents and purposes without any control structure. So it's just static content that you put up. But the reason I pose this is because there's a lot of sub-formats, you know, programs, and I can't think of one of them right off the top of my head, and maybe they're kind of going away, that uses HTML as kind of how they encapsulate some of their data. But the other is, I see so many individuals that are charged with having to maintain their website but they have no idea how to even go in and just do a quick little thing. As an example, WordPress, 9 times out of 10, you don't need to know it, but sometimes you have a special format where you have to do things in the HTML mode. And people freak out because they don't know.
They see all those brackets and exclamation points.
And they just don't know even where to begin. And I think that most businesses that I have come across, their employees are being tasked with doing this, but they don't know how. And so I view it as it's almost become an essential skill to know basic HTML. Nothing complex.
Now, I'm gonna rephrase your question.
Mm-hmm.
Would HTML be an important skill to have as a job seeker or kids coming out of high school has a skill they maybe should get some basics in high school or college?
Right.
And I would say yes in that case, because you're right. There are, if you're getting into almost any workplace anymore and someone says, hey, we want to do this on our webpage, or I wish I could do this. And if you have just an inkling of what HTML is, you can probably figure it out.
Right.
If you just know what it means, you can probably figure it out.
Yeah.
And I think if we rephrase that just a little bit, should people know it? I think probably not the average person.
Right.
But should the average job seeker, especially young job seekers that are just getting out of college and trying to market themselves, would that be something that maybe a good skill to have? Sure. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
Because there are many things that could open doors with that kind of knowledge.
Right.
So, and certainly programming has been something that has been pushed more and more and more. We're seeing articles about it and even a few news items that we are just really short in the United States in graduating competent programmers to go into this high-tech world that we've created.
Yeah. Do you know what the unemployment rate is for software engineers right now?
I'm going to guess 0.8.
Really close.
Am I?
Yeah, it's just less than 2%.
Oh, so it's okay. So I didn't think it'd be that high.
Yeah, but it's really, really low.
Right.
Yeah, I think I think they said it was the lowest of any industry.
And I would agree. Mm-hmm. I'd have to just from seeing the proliferation. I read an article today before we saw each other at the coffee shop that the top five skills to have as a programmer, one of them is they didn't say HTML. Two of them were Java and JavaScript.
Really?
And Java development. Another one was iOS development.
Oh, I could see that one.
Another one was, I'm trying to think what the other one was. It was, but they were, cloud. Anything cloud related.
Right.
Was one of the hot skills to have.
Right. Oh, I know why Java, because that's what Android is based on, is a type of Java. Yeah.
Well, and I guess so many, I know what the other one was, SQL and
database.
And database. Mm-hmm. Cloud-based databases.
Yep.
So, yeah, and you know, if you have a little inkling about what's going on in the technology world with everything going in the cloud,
mm-hmm.
then those skills make sense.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well, all right. Well, 241-880. Well, I'm not going to give out the phone number, but I'll give it out so you can write it down for next month. 241-8801, extension 1. But I think we're going to sign off.
I think so. I think we've done a lot of informing today.
Good. That's a good thing. Matt, have a great couple of weeks.
Yeah,
Hopefully, Adam may or may not be with us in 3 weeks.
It sounded like he was.
Sounded like he might be.
And sounded like he was going to be here for the summer with us.
Right.
Yep.
Cool. So in the meantime, everyone else out there listening, stay tuned for some great blues and other music coming up. And we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yep.
In the meantime, you can visit Matt online at Kettlewell. On
Twitter,
at Kettlewell, mm-hmm. or Matt Kettlewell on Facebook. You can find me at helpmerick.com or at helpmerick on Twitter.
Perfect.
Have a great evening.